Good morning, church. Grab your Bible and open up to Joshua chapter 2. If you're following along on your phone, that's awesome. You can open up your favorite Bible app. We read and teach out of the English Standard Version here at the Encounter Service, so you can follow along that way. We also have Bibles on the back table to the left as you leave. If you want one of those, you don't own a Bible, take one with you as a gift from us. And we're going to throw it up on these electronic Bibles behind me as well. So this week, I was getting ready for the sermon, and I was doing my reading, I was doing my prepping, and I was reminded of a meme that I saw a while back on Facebook. And the meme had a picture of a toddler behind an entertainment center, and she was smiling as she was pulling on cords. And the caption for the meme read this. It says, "Silence is golden unless you have a toddler. In that case, silence is very, very suspicious." And I laughed pretty good at that meme because I'm currently living that meme out in my own life. Our daughter Ainsley is 3 years old, and she loves cereal. She loves to watch Octonauts, and she's also a ninja. She has this uncanny ability to open up her bedroom door silently, sneak downstairs undetected. Once downstairs, she goes to our downstairs bathroom. She grabs the step stool that's there for the kids to wash their hands. She moves that into the kitchen. She, no matter what, will always locate the cookies or the candy or the cake or the brownies in our kitchen. She puts the step stool where it needs to be. She works her way up onto the counter. She partakes in the deliciousness that is there. And then just as silently as she entered the room, she will leave the room, make her way back up the stairs, and close her door. And then usually by this time I've awoken and I will notice that things are a little bit different in our house than the way they were the night before. And upon some investigating, I'll realize while she's a ninja, she doesn't cover her tracks very well. Because what gives it away is the chocolate on the corners of her mouth, the little fingerprints in the brownies, the step stool laying out. And so I'll go to her and I'll be like, "Ainsley, what's going on? Like, did you go downstairs?" "No." "Did you eat some brownies?" "No." "Are you sure?" "Yes." "Okay then." See, without even being taught, I didn't teach her to lie. She just kind of has this natural disposition to lying. She gets caught because, like, she's just forgotten about everything she did, right? She didn't put the stool back in the kitchen. She didn't recover up the brownies. She didn't wash off her face. She just misses those little details. She gets caught, and then when confronted, she lies. She tells a lie. And I'm pretty sure her mom didn't teach her how to lie. It's just a part of our nature. We lie instinctively when we're young, and unfortunately when we get older, some of us might stop lying, but many of the times because we're broken, sinful, rebellious sinners before God, before Jesus has come into our lives, our lying gets a little more sophisticated. We learn how to cover our tracks better. We realize, you know what I need to do is I got to recover up those brownies. Instead of digging my fingers into them, maybe I should use a knife and cut out a square. It'll be a little less suspicious. And so today we're going to look at a story in the Bible that deals with a lie. And we're going to look at and unpack really this story of Rahab. And we're going to see this amazing characteristic, this amazing truth about God in Joshua chapter 2. And so if you've been with us since the start of this year, you know we're kind of working through the Bible chronologically together as a church family. And here we are, the first Sunday in April, and guess what? We've made it through the Pentateuch. We made it through the first 5 books of the Bible. It only took us 3 months to make it through 5 books. We only have 61 more books to go. We're doing really well. So here we are in the book of Joshua. Remember, we left the people of Israel standing on the other side of the Jordan River. Moses has just given them his last sermon, his last speech. They're ready to enter into the promised land. At the end of Deuteronomy, Moses dies. He has fulfilled his mission that God put him on. And so now we read in Joshua 1 this arising of a new leader. God calls Joshua to lead the people of Israel into the promised land. And so he tells them, you're going to go across the river. You're going to drive out the people that are there. You're going to take the land that I have promised you. And so Joshua assumes control. He goes to the people. He tells them what's going on. And in Joshua chapter 2, we kind of have this little story that's kind of interrupts the main narrative. This would probably have taken place before this, where God is now going to use Joseph to go into the land with some spies. And so here we are, Joshua chapter 2. Follow along, starting in verse 1. It says, "And Joshua the son of Nun sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, 'Go view the land, especially Jericho.' And they went and came into the house of a prostitute, whose name was Rahab, and lodged there. And it was told to the king of Jericho, 'Behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land.' Then the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, 'Bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land.' But Rahab the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. And she said, 'True, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them.'" Verse 6, "But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax that she had laid in order on the roof. So the men pursued after them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fords, and the gate was shut as soon as the pursuers had gone out." These are the words of the Lord. For the sake of time, we're just going to read that short beginning here, really, to Rahab's story in Joshua. But I want to spend the time we have together kind of looking not just at the passage we have, but really of seeing the overall story of Rahab, because her story doesn't end at verse 7. It continues on, and we'll see her pop up in the scriptures. And my intention in doing this is for you to see how God moves in her life. To see how God moves in the life of this Gentile woman named Rahab. So look back at verse 1 here. Remember, at the end of Deuteronomy, Moses has died. Joshua has become the new leader for the Israelites. And at the beginning of the book, God says, "Okay, Joshua, it's time. It's time to take the people across the river. It's time to enter the land which I promise you, that land that's flowing with milk and honey, that great land. It's time." And so we kind of get this sense that Joshua is a good leader. He wants to do well by his people. And so in Joshua 2, we're told this story. And Joshua just doesn't want to take his people into the land, not knowing what they're really getting themselves into. So he sends these two spies. And if you remember, this is probably something he had learned from Moses. Moses had sent spies into the promised land. He sent 12 of them. 10 came back and said, "Look, let's not go there. There's a lot of people. They're great. Their numbers are huge." 2 came back and said, "Look, God has got this. We can go do this." And so Moses taught Joshua. Joshua's now learning from that past leader, and he says, "Let's send spies into the land." And so the spies leave where they're encamped. They cross the Jordan. They go into Jericho, probably the first major city-state that existed. At this time, countries really didn't exist as we know them. There wasn't a king over a country. There existed city-states. Each city operated as its own government with its own king. And they enter into Jericho, the first major city-state, and we read that they come to the house of this prostitute whose name is Rahab. and they lodge there. They stay the night. The spies here have chosen Rahab's home probably for a couple reasons. First, Rahab's house was located in the wall of the city. Later on in Joshua chapter 2, we learn that detail. And so when the spies entered this foreign place, this place that they had never been, they find this, what we believe to be not a brothel, but more of a hostel or a hotel. And they enter in. They don't have to travel very far into the land before they can kind of get some cover and kind of know what is going on. So first, her house was close to the city gate. It was right in the wall of the city. It was an easy access point to get in. Second, see, we're told her professed strangers to be entering into her house. See, we're told her profession. But like I mentioned, we have evidence, archaeological evidence, that suggests that her house was more than that. It often probably was a tavern or a hotel, so to speak, for travelers coming into the city. And so Joshua says, look, go there. They find the place of Rahab. And they stay there. They lodge there. Look at verse 2. And it was told to the king of Jericho, behold, the men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land. Almost immediately, the indication is the text is that the king knew of their presence. They weren't very good spies. Joshua even told them in verse 1, which I didn't know you had to necessarily tell spies. In verse 1, he says, go secretly. Go undetected. Don't get caught. Don't get found out. Like, I don't know, I'm not a spy. I've never been a spy. I'll probably never be a spy. But I'm pretty sure rule number 1 is don't get caught. Like, that has to be lesson number 1 in spy school. So Jericho says, go secretly into the city. And then almost immediately we're told that the king knew of their presence. The king is told, look, there are spies here. Men from Israel have entered our city. They're here to search out the land. But what was Joshua's focus? Kind of big picture, Joshua said, look, we need to go search out the land. That's important. But what were they especially to search out? Jericho, this first major city-state, this first stronghold of the Canaanite people. Joshua wanted them to focus on that. And so here we're told that these messengers come to the king. They say these spies are here. They're searching out the whole land. And as we read later, this is an indication of the paranoia that was gripping the Canaanite people. If you've been with us for a while, maybe you might remember slightly in the back of your mind somewhere, we talked about the fact that the exploits of Israel, the stories of Israel, were known throughout the land. They had been told to other people, and here we kind of see the fruit of that. These people are paranoid. The Canaanite people have heard the stories of Israel. They've heard about what has happened. They've heard about their God. And we know this because Rahab says in verses 9 through 11, listen to this. Rahab says, I know that the Lord has given you the land. Here is this woman raised in Jericho, living in Jericho, owns a business in Jericho. And she starts out, I know that the Lord has given you the land and that the fear of you has fallen upon us. And that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt. And what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, He is the God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. The people knew why Israel was there. They knew that their God, the same God who had parted the sea, the same God who had devoted to destruction kind of the world powers, the same God who spared them from the poisonous snake bites in the desert, the same God who caused manna to fall from heaven and quails to appear from nowhere, is now here. They're about to enter the land. Paranoia has set in. And what is the king's response in verse 3? We got to eradicate the spies. It says, then the king of Jericho sent to Rahab. And right there, the indication there is that the king sends messengers in his place. They carry with him his authority. Essentially, they're his prophets. And so the king sends his messengers to Rahab, and he says, bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land. In other words, Rahab, look, what you're doing right now is high treason. You are a citizen of Jericho. Spies have come into your house. They're here to take down our kingdom. They're here to destroy our king. Give us them now and we might spare you, I think would be the implication here. And look at Rahab's response in verse 4. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. We're told what has happened. That is expounded upon in verse 6. And she says to them, look, okay, that's true. The men came to me. What you heard was true. The report was true. The men came into me, but I did not know where they were from. I did not know who they were. See, the king knew they were there. Someone probably saw them enter into her house. They went and told the king, and so she can't deny that. She can't get past that. But she says, I don't know where they came from. And in verse 5, she says, and when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them. Do you kind of see what's happening here? You see the shift in Rahab's loyalty. Here we have Rahab not being loyal to her city-state, but being loyal towards Israel and ultimately God. See, Rahab was raised in a pagan, spiritually dead city called Jericho. And if you go on to read Joshua, as I hope you are, or may have done, or will do, Joshua is the story of the conquest of the land of Canaan. And a lot of times people want to say, well, look how horrible this is, that your God, this God that's supposed to be about love and peace and justice, goes and he commits genocide towards an entire group of people and wipes them out. And the problem is those people are just taking this one instance in Joshua, they're pulling it out of the context of the Bible, and they're saying, look at this, what do you say to this? But see, the land of Canaan wasn't just destroyed for fun. It was actually the culmination of judgment. It was the culmination of condemnation because they had sinned before a holy, perfect, and righteous God. And so here's God fulfilling his judgment through his people, much like later on in the Old Testament, God will fulfill his judgment on Israel through pagan cultures. And so here's a spiritually dead city that's standing in rebellious towards God that is now under condemnation from God. And you would look at someone like Rahab and you would say, look, she's not really the ideal candidate to come to faith in God. She didn't grow up in it. She didn't sit under Moses and Aaron. She didn't walk across the dried up Red Sea. She didn't eat the manna. She didn't picture the quail. She wasn't bitten by a serpent and then stared at a bronze image to save herself. She was not the ideal candidate for faith in God, yet she heard about those works. And here we're seeing her loyalty shift from her city-state, her pagan culture, towards the living God. She heard about the sea. She heard about Jesus, about the Exodus from Egypt. And do you remember what she said in verse 11 when I read it to you? You might have missed it. At the end of her whole talk about how the people were scared because they knew what was happening, she said this: "For the Lord your God, He is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath." Friends, this was a direct acknowledgement of God that was required in Israel. You might say it was a confession of the faith. Deuteronomy 4:39 says, "Know therefore today and lay it to your heart that the Lord is God in heaven above and on the earth beneath. There is no other." Friends, here we are seeing Rahab the prostitute, Rahab the woman raised in a pagan culture that stood in rebellion towards God, now putting her faith in the one true God of Israel. Because she heard of what God had done. She heard of the marvelous works of the God of Israel, of Yahweh. And how do the messengers respond? Look at verse 7. "So the men pursued after them on the way to Jordan as far as the fords." The men are persuaded by her story. We see divine providence here in protecting Rahab and the spies. They had every right to kick in the door and search her house. They had every right to come in and search out the spies. But instead, they go running into the wind outside the city, and the gates are shut. Now, that's not just a little detail, because that means now that the spies are completely dependent on Rahab. They're locked in. They're trapped in the city. And so after the messengers leave the king, the messengers of the king leave, Rahab returns to the roof where she's hidden the spies. And then we get those verses in 2, 9 through 11 where she confesses her faith in God. And ultimately from there she goes on to say, "Okay, I know what's going to happen. You guys are going to come in and there's going to be a destruction here. But just remember me. Remember my family. Spare us when Israel invades Jericho." And so the spies instruct her. They say, "Okay, look, because you've been faithful, because you've hidden us from the messengers of the king, when Israel returns, hang a scarlet cord in your window. And this will be an indication to the armies of Israel that you and everyone in your house will be spared." And then we read that Rahab lowers them down the city wall outside of her window. The spies then go into the hills. They remain there for 3 days until the messengers of the king return to Jericho and the spies return to Joshua. And Rahab's just in her place of business. She's in her house. And at this point, I have to be wondering what Rahab was thinking. What was running through Rahab's mind? She just saved these spies of Israel. She knows what's about to happen. And all she has to go on now is their word and their story. Maybe she's thinking, "Well, what happens if they forget? What if they spend all that time out in the wilderness, they get caught up doing busyness of life, trying to survive to get back to Joshua, and they forget to tell Israel about the scarlet cord?" She's living right now completely by faith. She doesn't really know if she can trust the spies. But she doesn't leave. She doesn't run away. She stays. She has faith in this God that she has knowledge of through these stories. And eventually in Joshua 5 and 6, we read that Israel returns to Jericho. God instructs them, look, you're not going to go and fight this battle against the city. And so he says, here's what you are to do. Take the ark, take the people, march around the city for 7 days. And on the seventh day, God instructs them to blow a horn, and he says that the walls will fall, giving Israel the ability to attack from every direction. And so we read about this in Joshua 6. The walls fall. Israel is faithful to the words of God. They march around the city. The walls come tumbling down. The entire city is devoted to destructions. They are instructed not to take anything with them. Everything is destroyed except for Rahab and her family. Because Rahab had faith in the God of Israel to hang the scarlet cord. She had faith that the God of Israel would protect her. Joshua 6:25 says, but Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Friends, the prostitute who lied to city officials, who grew up in a pagan culture, who probably worshipped false gods most of her life, is now included in the people of Israel. And she has lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. And her story doesn't end here. She's found in the lineage of Jesus Christ in the book of Matthew. Hebrews 11:31 says, by faith Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. Hebrews 11 is commonly referred to as the hall of faith. And she's included in there. Friends, I've been so intrigued by the story of Rahab this week. Because she reminds me of me. I've read numerous scholars, I've read numerous commentators this week, and they've kind of all have this same idea that Rahab is a foreshadowing of the Gentile church. She points to sinners who are saved by God. The story of Rahab should touch our hearts and our minds in a special way because she's us. She's us. She's a foreshadowing of believers, of sinful people who stand in rebellion towards God yet put their faith in the living God of the Bible. And when I read through the lineage of Jesus Christ, I'm uplifted because I see God using sinners for his glory. When I read out of the book of Hebrews, I'm uplifted because I see God lifting up sinners for his glory. And I can look at my life and say, Lord, I am a sinner who doesn't deserve what I have. I don't deserve to be standing up here. I haven't done anything special. But he's using me for his glory. You could sum up this truth about God. You could sum up this story of Rahab this way. God punishes sin, but saves the believing sinner. God punishes sin, but saves the believing sinner. That's what I believe the story of Rahab shows us. The sin of Jericho was punished. The sin of Canaan was punished. And yet God saved Rahab because her faith was in God. She had heard the stories of God's marvelous works. And because of those stories, she was driven to forsake everything she knew.
She was driven to forsake everything she had grown up with, every truth that she held dearly, every thought that she thought was saving her. She forsake it all when she heard the marvelous works of God, and she turned to that God. So if you're here today, and you call yourself a follower of Jesus, my question is this: what's our excuse? What's our excuse? Friends, we have Jesus. We have the Creator who stepped into creation. We have the Creator who died in our place and walked out of the grave 3 days later, defeating death. And yet we yearn to conform to the pagan culture around us. We yearn for sin. I fight daily to kill sin in my own life. What's my excuse? Friends, our faith must be placed in the God of Scripture. This Wednesday is our last Lenten service. And if you've been coming to those, we're going through the I Am statements of Jesus. And this Wednesday, God providentially declared that I would preach after preaching this message. And I'm preaching on Jesus saying, I am the door, or I am the gate. Friends, our faith must be in Jesus if we are to be spared the punishment of sin. Let's pray. Father, I just come to you today, Lord. So thankful that you have provided a way. Lord, I'm so thankful that you haven't just left us stranded. Lord, that you haven't just left us dead in our sin. That you didn't just give up on us, wipe your hands, walk away. That you provided a lifeline. Lord, that you sent your Son, the Creator of the world, who Paul says that all things were created by him, through him, for him, that you sent him into creation to die a horrendous death that was deserved, that was reserved for us. So that we could walk in newness of life, so that we could come to faith. So that we could be reconciled, adopted as sons and daughters of the King. Lord, I thank you for stories like Rahab that shows us not only are you consistent in your judgment, in your righteousness, in your justice, but that you are consistent in your grace and your mercy and in your love, and that you'll save the believing sinner. Lord, that you do all of this for your glory and your glory alone. So right now, Father, I ask that you just move in this place. Lord, I ask that there would be encouragement where encouragement is needed, that there would be conviction where conviction is needed, that there would be comfort where comfort is needed, Father. Lord, as we walk out of this place onto this mission field, that we would go with a yearning to follow you. And we would go with a yearning to spread the gospel to our friends and our families and our coworkers and our neighbors would be glorified. I pray these things in your name.